Hello and welcome to the Beyond Biotech podcast number 87. I'm Jim Cornall and this is the weekly podcast from LaBiotech. There's a clear demand for novel neurological treatments. While it's widely known psychedelics hold quite a lot of therapeutic potential, there are challenges. Our guest this week is Dr. Sam Clark, who founded Terran Biosciences to develop a safe, effective portfolio of therapeutics and technologies for patients with neurological and psychiatric diseases. And I first asked Sam for an introduction to the company itself.
Terran is a biotech platform company that I founded back when I was finishing up med school. I can tell you a little bit about myself. So I did my undergrad degree in neuroscience at MIT, and then I did my MD and my PhD at Columbia. Now, growing up, I had a lot of family members and friends that were affected by severe mental illnesses, especially bipolar disorder and Alzheimer's disease. And so I always wanted to figure out better ways to treat these disorders. And that's why I got into neuroscience. I wanted to understand the brain. And then when I was finishing up my MD and my PhD at Columbia, you know, I was realizing that there are not a lot of good treatments for these disorders. The ones that do exist have a lot to be desired: side effects, slow onset. And then for disease of neurodegeneration like Alzheimer's, we just don't have anything that truly is able to modify the course of the disease rather than just treat the symptoms. And there's also been a lack of new treatments, you know, coming in. They're fairly slow to get new mechanisms. A lot of the new treatments have just followed a lot of the rehashing of the same mechanisms as before. So when I was finishing up, I said, all right, instead of going into medicine, I'm going to found a biotech company to really help address this. And I founded Terran Biosciences and decided to do things a little bit differently. So I was inspired at the time by looking at a lot of the tech startups in Silicon Valley and saying, wow, they move so quickly. They're able to do so much in such a short period of time, while a lot of the biotechs I was looking at were moving very slowly. So I said, we're going to found Terran with a unique company structure that's more flat, where instead of having this hierarchical approach to drug development, we would have a more flat organization where we have a small team. It's very lean, of highly trained operators. They're very good at keeping everything organized. And then we hire on the world experts into specific sub-teams to solve these problems that are previously thought to be impossible. And we've had a lot of success since then. Since the company was founded, we've brought on late-stage assets, partnered an exclusive licensing agreement assets with Sanofi, where they transferred to us 15,000 patients and over 100 clinical trials. We partnered a late-stage asset that had previously been in phase 3 with another French company called Pierre Fabre, where we exclusively licensed this drug, idazoxan. And that's right now in a clinical study that's ongoing. And we think that could really revolutionize schizophrenia treatment. And then we also brought on AI-enabled programs. And we brought on software as a medical device that actually just got FDA clearance. And then finally, we also entered psychedelics, where Terran is one of the largest manufacturers of what's called GMP. It's a grade of chemical for human use, psychedelics in the world. And we've created more new psychedelic structures than any group that we're aware of right now. And these are tailored compounds to treat specific diseases, new versions of psilocybin, DMT, LSD, MDMA, all sorts of improvements that we've been advancing.
Maybe we could talk initially about the psychedelics, but what are the challenges of using psychedelics?
So there are a number of challenges, and the first is they're very highly regulated compounds. So you have to make sure you're working with groups that have all the right licenses and you're following all the government regulation. So we do that. And we're actually doing a lot of work right now in Europe. We have big manufacturing ongoing in Europe. We're supplying clinical studies in Europe right now with our compounds. And then we opened up research labs where we were doing research in the UK, where they also have good regulations supporting the research around psychedelics. So in the UK, we were creating a large number of new psychedelics where we would say, you know, we want to improve certain aspects. I'll give you a few examples. There are psychedelics that have long histories of human use. One of them is DMT and 5-methoxy-DMT. But these compounds aren't orally active, meaning you can't take them in a pill without combining them with other compounds because they break down. But when you combine them with other things called a MAO inhibitor, it can lead to nausea, vomiting, and side effects. So we took a unique approach called a prodrug approach, where you add a little extra side chain to the molecule that allows it to be absorbed through the stomach, but then the side chain falls off, allowing just the normal molecule in the bloodstream to act on the brain without modification. That worked. We created the world's first orally active DMT. It's absorbed through the GI tract, 5-methoxy-DMT. We then took that same approach to create the world's first long-acting MDMA. As MDMA right now in clinical studies has shown, you have to, in many cases, dose it twice because it wears off so quickly. So we create a longer acting form, new forms of LSD, improved forms of compounds like 2CB and other things that are more designed for more tailored treatment. And then other empathogens similar to MDMA. We've improved compounds like methylone and MBDB. These are weaker empathogens, but have a lot of potential for treating a PTSD.
Is there still somewhat of a stigma attached to psychedelics because of association with LSD, or is that long since passed?
You know, I think it's largely passed now that we have so many companies doing research. The literature has been very clear about the clear benefit of psychedelics to treat, you know, different mental illnesses. And so the thing is that we actually haven't dealt with any stigma in that sense. I think people recognize that under the care of a doctor, you know, with a prescription, you know, these medicines can be life-changing. And people have also seen the impact of severe mental illness and, you know, how desperately we need new treatments for mental illness. So I would say we have not seen at least any degree of stigma related to our work. And I think just societally, I think people are ready for FDA and EMA cleared psychedelic-based medications.
They have to be administered safely anyway. It's not as if somebody's going to take LSD and have all kinds of weird side effects. It's very strictly regulated. How do they work, the psychedelics on the brain?
Right. And first, you brought up a great point that these are what we're discussing is psychedelics in a doctor's office regulated by a doctor. But there's a few benefits there. So I'll talk about how they work. And that is that psychedelics hit a lot of receptors in the brain. And there's been, in some cases, LSD hits more than 20 targets. Now, there's been a number of papers that have come out trying to explain exactly what are the receptors that are responsible for that efficacy. And there's been a lot of debate. You know, some may say, well, it's a BDNF, a brain growth factor receptor, you know, and then another group says, well, it's actually a combination of serotonin 1 receptor and a bunch of different, you know, and maybe some serotonin C receptor. And, you know, there's all this debate. But the idea is that scientists discovered, though, that despite all those targets, there's actually only one receptor in the brain that's responsible for the hallucinations, the trip caused by psychedelics. So whereas the actual receptors involved in efficacy is still hotly debated in the literature, the trip is caused just through the serotonin 2A receptor. And that discovery led to another big breakthrough that we're actually working on. And that is that these scientists around the world at different labs said, we know the psychedelics hit a lot of receptors. We know the 2A is the only one required for the trip. What if we were to take a psychedelic, combine it with a selective serotonin 2A blocker, a second compound that was so selective, it only blocked the receptor responsible for the trip? Could we then allow the psychedelic to hit all those other receptors, maintain its efficacy, but have no hallucinations? If that were the case, this could be a potential take-home medication for depression, something that would allow the power of psychedelics to reach much more people, and where you can use original effective psychedelics like psilocybin or DMT, compounds that have been, psilocybin has thousands of years of human use already. So those scientists did that, and they did a number of animal studies at labs all over the world. And they found that those psychedelics, when combined with a serotonin receptor blocker, were just as effective in the animal models as a psychedelic alone. Now, we then at Terran Biosciences, we recognized this breakthrough and we went and licensed on all those patents and technology from the different academic groups to develop this. But we said, you know, we need to move this into humans. Because as you know, scientists have already cured all diseases known to mouse kind, but we don't know if it translates to humans. So we got the first human data with a data analysis study of a trial done in Europe where they did functional imaging while taking the psychedelic alone and the psychedelic with the blocker in humans. And what they found is the psychedelic alone causes rewiring of the networks in the brain, as has been shown in many studies before. And that's thought to underlie some of that efficacy. But the shocking thing we found was that the psychedelic with the blocker still maintains the same rewiring of the brain in the absence of any trip. So now we're developing this into a medication where we believe this could potentially be a take-home medication where you can get the benefits of psychedelics to treat diseases like depression with a pill you can take at home where there is no trip. Where people who can't afford to go in and get the trip or the time commitment, or they could have a bad trip, they can just take this instead and still get that benefit. So that's one of the main things we're pushing forward. And the exciting thing is those blockers were the ones we licensed from Sanofi. Sanofi had the world's best serotonin receptor blockers. They licensed that to us. We have our robust psychedelic program. We put the two together. And that's what we're developing as a psychedelic without the trip.
Have you worked on things like dose or the frequency that people would have to take that?
We are working on that right now. Those are questions we're pursuing excitedly.
Obviously, there are lots of different approaches to tackling things like mental illness or depression or schizophrenia. What's so attractive about the use of psychedelics as opposed to some of the other approaches?
Psychedelics represent a new mechanism to treat. The best way to understand it is to just look at what's been developed already. Originally, you had monoamine oxidase inhibitor, MAO inhibitors, and those generally raise neurotransmitter levels around the brain, but they have a lot of side effects. Then you've got selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors, which globally raise serotonin, but they can take months to work. And they have a lot of side effects, of sexual dysfunction, weight gain, all sorts of potential issues, withdrawal syndrome. And then you've got more selective ones that hit certain receptors, but again, slower time to onset, side effects, Wellbutrin, a compound that works on the dopaminergic system, can cause seizures, takes time to work. Psychedelics, shockingly, seem to be able to have longer lasting efficacy. That is rapid acting. So it's a rapidly acting efficacy that seems to last longer per dose. They're not necessarily a cure where you just take it and you're good for the rest of your life, but they do represent a class where the mechanism seems to be have serious benefits in both safety and time to onset and efficacy. And that's why people are so excited. Now, they do come with a trip, which can present an obstacle for some people. But as we covered earlier, there are ways to remove that trip that we are pursuing. And then there are conditions where the trip may be useful, conditions where that are based on life trauma, such as post-traumatic stress disorder, that really require therapy. And in that sense, the psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy with aspects of the psychedelic experience can be very beneficial. So you actually get another layer of benefit from the trip itself.
You mentioned some of the drugs in the pipeline. Idazoxan XR. Could you
Yes.
tell me a little bit about that one?
Yes. So that's one of our most exciting assets. So the story behind that asset was this was a drug developed by Pierre Fabre in France. And this was a drug that they had all the way in these big phase three trials for Parkinson's disease almost 30 years ago in the 1990s. Now, it wasn't very effective in Parkinson's for tremor, but at the same time, they had a collaboration going on with the National Institute of Mental Health in the United States, where in the United States, they said, look, this is a very effective drug for schizophrenia with a new mechanism. It's a selective alpha-2 antagonist. And by adding it to existing antipsychotic regimens, we're able to boost the efficacy and, in many cases, double the efficacy of the baseline treatment. And what that means is that this could be what's called an adjunctive treatment, something you add on top of existing therapy for another enormous benefit. And the exciting thing was that at the time, years later, we had a drug called Abilify developed, which was an adjunctive for depression. Adding on top of your standard antidepressants, it would help provide additional benefit. But there's been nothing like that for schizophrenia. There are currently no FDA-approved drugs for the adjunctive treatment where you add it on top of your existing regimen. So at the time, Pierre Fabre actually discontinued the drug because of one problem, and that was the drug was too short-acting. You had to take it up to three times, to even some cases, four times a day. It has such a short half-life. So that combined with leaving neuroscience as a whole, many big pharmas pulled out of neuro and the drug was shelved. Despite the efficacy, there were these pharmacokinetic challenges that stopped the development, which was sad because at the time, one of the doctors running the trial said patients and their families were calling, begging to be put back on the drug. It was that effective. But there was nothing they could do. The whole program had been discontinued. So we brought back this drug. We went to France. We exclusively licensed the drug from Pierre Fabre, got all of the full manufacturing data in. And then we spent several years actually building a once daily version. We built the world's first extended release version of idazoxan. And we also made a number of other improvements to the molecule along the way. And then we went to the FDA. We got the green light to put that into this phase one trial to show that pharmacokinetically we could hit the right pharmacokinetic range that we would you could achieve to treat schizophrenia. And the drug has performed great in that trial. And then the goal is then to take it into a schizophrenia trial next as an adjunctive treatment. And we think this could really revolutionize the treatment and give new options for patients because there are currently no drugs on the market anywhere with this mechanism.
You mentioned changing it from its initial form so that its efficacy and frequency is better. You almost make it sound like it's a very easy thing to do, but clearly it isn't an easy thing to do. How do you go about making those changes?
Those can be very difficult. And initially, we tried to do it and we had reports saying it wasn't possible. But what we did is, remember, I said that Terran has that unique structure where we find the world's experts to solve problems that were typically thought to be impossible. So we searched everywhere until we found someone who had many FDA cleared, extended release, once daily products. And that person was actually about to retire. But they said, all right, we'll take this on as one of our last projects. And they were able to work with the manufacturing team and figure out a way to overcome all the challenges of that molecule in order to make it into a viable once daily release product. And it's by building these teams of people who are highly skilled around just one specific problem, we're able to get these solutions that have derailed entire big pharma programs previously.
That's quite a different model in terms of a company, because quite often people, as you said at the beginning, you have a very lean team. What made you choose that path that is quite different, but clearly quite effective?
So there was a couple things, two factors. When I was finishing up at my PhD, I was looking at different biotech companies that were operating and they had clinical trial readouts coming out. And I saw how companies that seemed to be organized well would have mistakes in the way they would either run the clinical trial or the indication or the endpoint or a problem with the manufacturing that would get propagated down the chain and they wouldn't get fixed. And they would end up in a clinical trial, maybe where they've chosen the wrong endpoint, but they can't fix it at that point. And they would kind of just go forward and the trial would fail. And, the company would collapse or the stock would go down. At the same time, I was watching the kind of rise of some of these big Silicon Valley unicorns like Uber, Snapchat, Instagram, just seeing how, and this was over, a long period of time, and just seeing how fast companies would move and pivot and how lean they were and how nimble. And I said, why is there nothing like this in biotech? And I was looking at the company structure. Well, in biotech, you've got the CEO, and the CEO may only be tangentially involved in the drug development. And then you've got the CMO, and then you've got all the directors under the CMO, and you've got executive directors and directors and managers, and there's so many layers of management and the scientists, and there's all these buffers. In Terran, we don't have that. I'm the CEO, but I'm directly in contact and directly involved in the inventions we create, in the manufacturing. For the idazoxan XR, I attended every single manufacturing meeting over a multi-year period to really understand, what was going on, that we were on track, that nothing was, getting delayed. And that enables, that flat organization structure enables us to see immediately when something isn't going right and to pivot quickly to fix it. It's a unique structure and it works for us. We've been able to make it work incredibly well, but it may not work for everyone. It may not be the right model for example, a big pharma who with, 50 products on the market and needs, many layers of management to commercialize those products. But at the same time, we don't see big pharma producing the innovation that they used to. It used to be that the innovations would come out of labs in big pharma. Big pharma labs don't produce much innovation anymore. They come from small companies, and then they use the merger acquisition model to snap up the inventions, buy them in, and then commercialize them. We're past the days where Merck was just pumping out all the first statins in the world and everything, just immediately putting them, on the market, and they would come out of the Merck research lab. Now it comes out of small biotech labs, largely funded by venture with one asset. And if the asset's successful, a big pharma will buy them. It's not to say that big pharma doesn't do any innovation. They definitely do, but it's a different model. We've moved more into the small companies get bought out by bigger company. It's a merger acquisition model. Now, I think for small companies, this works very well. It potentially could work for much larger companies, but it's on a case-by-case basis.
Could you also go through maybe eplizarin and valansarin?
Those are selective serotonin 2A receptor blockers that we are using to remove the hallucinations from psychedelics, and which may result in a take-home medication without the trip. A second thing we're using them for is that as a standalone compound, you could end psychedelic trips or tailor them to any duration, which means let's say you want to go in and your doctor wants to give you psychedelic-assisted psychotherapy. But they say, look, LSD can last 12 hours. That's too many hours. So why don't you come in for 3 hours of therapy and then you take a receptor blocker and you'll end the therapy then and we'll tailor your trip duration only 3 hours. And that way you can make it more manageable, come in for multiple 3 hour sessions instead of, an all day experience where you get hungry, you get tired, and it's just too long. In that case, these receptor blockers enable Taryn to tailor the duration. And what if someone has a bad trip? You just take the blocker and you can end the trip right away. And so that's something that we think will be needed by all psychedelic treatment centers in the future. Everyone is going to need a way to tailor the duration of their trips and to end bad trips. And with these compounds, well, we hope to provide that solution.
And when you're talking about repurposing of different drugs that have been used in the past for other things, I guess the message is that you don't necessarily always need to reinvent the wheel.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is that there are compounds that have been highly effective in the past, safe and selective, that just, have given our knowledge of the brain 20 years ago, they just didn't know what to use it for and they were shelved. And so one of the advantages of Taryn and our unique structure is being able to bring back those medications, improve on them, and put them where they really can provide benefit. Because for example, eplizarin and valansarin are selective serotonin 2A receptor blockers. 20 years ago, there wasn't much of a need to selectively block the serotonin 2A receptor. In the early 2000s, you said, well, we can block that receptor. People say, well, what's that good for? I mean, maybe it's a good antipsychotic, but it didn't really pan out. And in this case, we found that, well, psychedelics activate that receptor. There's a huge unmet need to block that receptor now. And so that's now is really the best time for those. So compounds can be discovered before people realize they're useful. I'll give you an example. MDMA, that compound is currently undergoing review by the FDA, and it may be cleared later this year. MDMA is, highly effective to treat post-traumatic stress disorder with therapy. And, in the 80s is when it really was, late 70s or 80s was when it really started to be tested for that. And then it was made illegal, and now it's been brought back. But if you wouldn't really guess that MDMA was first synthesized in 1912. That's the drug that people started taking at raves in the 80s. But it's been around since 1912, just nobody realized what it did back then. That drug was invented way back, and nobody really knew that at the time we had MDMA, but nobody imagine that could have been used for post-traumatic stress disorder throughout the last century, but nobody knew about it. And so that's the idea is that compounds can be developed long before we realize what they're useful for.
as we develop more and more drugs, and as we have more companies and more capacity to do things, sometimes standalone drugs that didn't work in one particular way might work in combination with other therapies and other drugs.
That's right. And that's what we're doing with eplavansiran and volanansiran. And similarly, another item we're really working on is to make sure, though, that the standalone drugs, that the price remains accessible and affordable for patients, and that we don't end up in a situation where one company is controlling, the whole a monopoly on any drug from DMT, psilocybin, MDMA, or any compound. And in the United States, we have a great program where that, get your own drugs on the market to keep the prices down, called the 505(b)(2) path. That's a path that generic drug manufacturers take. It means 5 years after a molecule that's off patent gets approved, you're able to use that data package to put a similar molecule on the market without having to go back and do the expensive phase three trials. And Terran has now ramped up and is ready to do that for psilocybin, MDMA, and we hope to do with DMT and 5-methoxy-DMT as well. So we have very robust 505(b)(2) programs to put classic psychedelics on the market 5 years after any other company puts them on the market to guarantee affordable access for patients.
So I guess we're not talking about some of the therapies that can cost millions of dollars per dose.
Well, the shocking thing is that because of the time it takes to have these psychedelic trips, we had heard, prices thrown around in the past that were outrageous, that doctors could be charging enormous sums of money for patients to come in and get, a 6-hour trip experience. It could be in the tens of thousands, people were saying. And we said, this is outrageous. Terran Biosciences will find a way to make sure that patients have accessible, affordable medications. And the only way to do that is to get 505(b)(2) medicines on the market 5 years after any clearance. Now, we've taken a unique approach here to guarantee that we're able to do that. And that is that there is one loophole in that program that some companies use to block generic entry. And that is this Orange Book exemption. What that means is that 5 years is up for a molecule where the composition of the molecule is off patent. But if there's some patent on some aspect of administration or something related to that compound, and they have a patent registered in the Orange Book, they can file a lawsuit against generics coming on to try to slow them down for, 30 months. It's a huge amount of time. So what we've done at Terran is we've created new salts and polymorphs of the molecules. What that means is we take the same molecule, for example, MDMA is getting approved right now as the hydrochloride salt. We create the fumarate and the hemifumarate salt. It turns into the same molecule in the body. It's just as bioavailable as the hydrochloride salt. In our case, we think it's actually better. We believe it has serious advantages over the hydrochloride salt, but it's neither here nor there. The idea is that because they both turn into MDMA in the body, the FDA in many cases allows that to just be a 505(b)(2) path. Same molecule, different salt. But the fact that they're different salts means that any patents on the hydrochloride salt cannot block the hemifumarate salt that Terran develops. Same thing. Psilocybin getting developed right now is a zwitterion. It's a non-salt form, but it's just psilocybin. Terran has created the first hydrochloride salt of psilocybin in the world. And that is not affected by the patents covering the zwitterionic form of psilocybin. And so we believe we will not be affected by any Orange Book challenges coming up. And Terran will succeed to bring cheap, affordable medications to patients the 5 years after using the data packages from the approved drugs in order to guarantee that patients have access to their medications.
When you first started many years ago, did you kind of realize all of the things that you'd have to get into, like patents and things that are different from what you set out to do?
I have to admit, there was a lot of surprises along the way. Biotech is more complicated than it looks when you're starting out, but we learn quickly. We have great advisors. We have the best attorneys in the world, we believe, to help us navigate the complex regulatory and IP landscape to get those affordable medications to patients. Because look, that was one of the main issues that I was seeing, back in college, is friends that where there were new branded medications they couldn't afford or their healthcare didn't cover it. And, it's just, we don't want to see that happen with psychedelics, where, these are compounds that have been around for thousands of years of human use. Cost should not be a barrier to entry. And as such, Terran has already ramped up the large scale manufacturing of these psychedelics at our plant in Europe, where we're already supplying clinical studies with our psychedelics right now. And we are excited to use that already validated process. We already submitted a drug master file to the FDA for psilocybin. And we will be using the manufacturing to put those Terran branded compounds on the market 5 years after in a 505(b)(2).
Could you tell me a little bit about empathogens and your work with that?
Absolutely. So empathogens, the main one everyone knows about is MDMA. And these are compounds that increase people's feeling of empathy. And when paired with therapy, has been shown to be highly effective at post-traumatic stress disorder. That is a debilitating, terrible disease that can happen when people experience traumatic life event, from assaults, through war, through all sorts of, terrible things. And MDMA is the one that Lykos is right now has submitted for FDA clearance. And MDMA is also the one where Terran has created the world's first new salts. And we're gearing up, because we already have big manufacturing ongoing, we're gearing up for our 505(b)(2). However, there are a number of other empathogens that are weaker that may have benefit and may even be able to be taken at home one day. These are compounds that Terran has looked at for many years. So one is MDEA. It's an analog of MDMA that's a little weaker and we think could be beneficial and have advantages over MDMA. Another is the very weak MBDB that we believe could have advantages for treating anxiety and other conditions that aren't as powerful as something you need for post-traumatic stress disorder, but has kind of a more mild effect. And the last one where we've made a lot of improvements is a compound called methylone that we've been developing for a number of years. And that's where we actually found that the molecule itself, which exists in the right and left-handed forms of the molecule, the side effects were associated with just one form and the benefits were associated with the other form. And so we purified the molecule to remove the mirror image that caused the side effects and then developed a number of new breakthrough salts, polymorphs, and are developing that as an alternative therapy for treating post-traumatic stress disorder in what's called its enantiomerically pure form. That means the pure form of the molecule that is missing the other form that causes what we believe to be all the side effects.
You've got so many things on the go. Where are you at with clinical trials right now?
So we're actually in a big clinical trial right now, a multi-site in Australia, where we are finishing up the testing of that new form of itazoxan and scheduled to enroll over 150 people to finish that trial. And that's going very well. We are supplying psychedelics to different clinical trials in Europe at different academic sites. And then we have some more clinical trials planned coming up.
Could you tell me about NM101?
Oh, yes. That's our software program. So this is a very exciting breakthrough. And that is that there is a biomarker for dopamine that was really discovered a while back, but in the last 20 years has been shown in many research studies to be a great diagnostic and prognostic marker for Parkinson's, just to aid in the diagnosis of Parkinson's, to help predict who's going to respond to treatment, to really just monitor that disease. And it's called neuromelanin. And every day, a little bit of our dopamine in our brains breaks down and it binds to iron and it forms this breakdown product called neuromelanin. It can be detected on a standard MRI without contrast. Now, right now, in the diagnosis of Parkinson's, patients undergo, in many cases, not all, but in many cases, they undergo an imaging test called the DAT scan, where they get an IV infusion, a radioactive radio tracer, and it takes a number of hours, and it can be painful, and it can expose you to radiation, and it can be very expensive. But there have been clinical studies of neuromelanin in the past in the literature that says that neuromelanin is as effective as a DAT scan in just 5 minutes on an MRI scan. No contrast, no radiation, no IV infusion. And it's just what the literature was saying. And there are all these recommendations in the literature for it to be the new standard of care. But despite all of those, it was never FDA cleared And the reason why is there was no way to standardize the measurement and automate it. So Columbia University, University of Ottawa made a number of breakthroughs in algorithms to do that. We licensed them on. Then we reprogrammed those algorithms into a full cloud-based deployable package that could integrate with any hospital worldwide directly through their imaging system, meaning a doctor can just get an MRI, push a button, it sends it straight to Terran, we analyze it and send back a result, de-identified so there's no privacy risk, and they get the neuromelanin measurement. The FDA recently cleared our software as a medical device for the measurement of neuromelanin, where it can provide a potentially useful adjunctive information to doctors who want neuromelanin imaging. And this is the first time in history that a software has been FDA cleared for the analysis of neuromelanin MRI. And we've had 20 years of doctors calling for this to be included in the standard of care. And so we're very excited to finally make that available.
I guess there are other companies working on psychedelics. How does what you do differ to some of the other companies?
Right. So there are other companies developing psychedelics, and I think they can largely fit into two buckets. Bucket one, companies developing classic psychedelics, DMT, 5-methoxy-DMT, LSD, MDMA, you know, the classic, and psilocybin, just straight up in a pill with a trip. And that has long history of human use. The trials have shown it to be effective. And what we do is a little different. We're not pushing through the original classic psychedelic alone. We'll use the 505B2 path. And when I say alone, I mean just without any combination of other drugs, just the pill itself. Because we have already robust manufacturing, new forms of the drug, we're able to do the 505B2 path. It would be a waste of money for us to repeat the same clinical trials that are ongoing right now with classic psychedelics, because they're already showing to be effective and they're going to get the drugs approved. And then Terran will be there to put essentially generic form of the drug on the market 5 years after approval without any orange book block. Then the second bucket is companies trying to remove the trip from psychedelics. Those companies do this through deriving the molecule, making derivatives, but then they end up with versions of the molecule that have never been tested in humans and aren't necessarily safe or effective. And as we know, the majority of compound derivatives are eliminated at phase one due to safety or efficacy, or safety or problems, pharmacokinetic issues, and then by phase two, a lack of efficacy. So what Terran does is we take the classic psychedelic, combine it with the receptor blocker, remove the trip as a combo pill, and then you get the benefit of the original psychedelic. At least that's the goal, to get the benefit and safety of the original psychedelic. And no other company in the world is doing that. And then we don't know of anyone else in the world that's developing a compound to end psychedelic trips. And that's our blocker alone, because we have the worldwide exclusive rights to these blockers from Sanofi.
Do you think that some of these conditions ultimately are curable, or are you really just looking at management?
I think what we're looking at is much better treatment. We haven't seen cases where psychedelics necessarily, well, it depends on the disease, I think. Post-traumatic stress disorder, because it's tied to a specific life event, is potentially curable in some cases, if you can get the therapy and be treated. But certain cases of depression or schizophrenia or bipolar, those are based on changes in the brain that may be with you for the rest of your life. But with treatments that are long lasting and potentially can reverse some of that, we're moving towards much better treatments. We haven't seen anything yet that's a full cure, meaning a, you know, one and you're totally done kind of treatment. But the goal is that we get treatments that are so good that patients living with these conditions can have a great quality of life. And look, there may be something in the future that's developed that will be that cure. We haven't seen it yet, but with gene therapies down the line and all sorts of things, there may be that, you know, eventually medicine will get so good that we hope we can just cure everything with one treatment. But our goal is now to treat more effectively with less side effects and move towards those cures as best we can. Right now, treatments are able to stop hallucinations, but they're not able to stop what's called the negative symptoms of schizophrenia, which are social withdrawal and depression and memory loss and cognitive decline. And originally, when schizophrenia was first discovered, it was classified along with dementias due to the degree of cognitive decline. And unfortunately, while current medications can treat hallucinations, it's hard to treat those other symptoms. And that's what we're also working towards. And we hope idazoxan will do that because iodoxin did show significant benefit on negative and cognitive symptoms in its last clinical studies. And so we're really hoping this could really revolutionize the treatment and improve the quality of life for patients living with these conditions.
And it's a global issue and it's a big issue. So,
It's a surprisingly common issue. It may surprise you to know that schizophrenia occurs at a higher rate than type 1 diabetes and Alzheimer's disease. And the thing is that studies have shown between, 0.7 to 1%, the entire world's population, almost one out of 100 people has schizophrenia. But it's so debilitating that those people often end up on the street or out of sight. We don't see them as much as, and so things, diseases like, oh, type 1 diabetes or Alzheimer's, it's more in our sight. So we think they're much more common. But in reality, schizophrenia is a surprisingly prevalent and common disorder that really needs more treatment. It's just completely debilitating in many cases, but we are working towards improving the treatments for those patients that don't have good options right now.
another enjoyable and also very informative conversation. Hopefully, all of the amazing work that the company is doing pays off, and they really are doing a lot of work. And also an interesting model for how the company operates. Don't forget to check out the latest news and articles over at labiotech.eu, and I hope wherever in the world you are, you have a great week ahead. Thanks for listening. And I hope you'll join us again next time for another Beyond Biotech.